Recording.
Okay, so apparently okay, Marv's having a hard time.
Yeah, I got his text too. So, all right, welcome, John. We'll be starting in a moment. Yeah, Marv is trying to log back in.
It's ironic. Last time it was me, Marv.
Okay. So Marv is in now, so we can unmute Marv. All right. Oh, yeah, Marv is making a lot of feedback.
Can you hear that, Marv?
Yeah. All right, excuse us. We're just delaying the meeting here for a moment while we get the technical issues sorted out.
Okay, Tara, do you need either Matt or I to remain for the...
I do not. Thank you both so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Will you be available next Tuesday at 6:30?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be available.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you.
Okay, good night.
All right, good night. Thank you. Okay, welcome all. We've got Julia, we've got Judy in, and there goes Marv's phone
Sorry,
again.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, how do we combat that? Or isn't there a way?
Yeah, other than muting him, but then he can't contribute, but it does need to be out. So Marv, is there, can you use a different phone? That phone, or Marv, computer is logged in still and it's making feedback with your phone.
Okay, Marv just is texting here.
Okay. All right, yeah. If we can text with you, that's great. Because I need to start the meeting. Can we mute the feedback?
So here's what he's saying. He's saying, I can hear you, but you have me muted. I'm not on the computer. So, yeah, so Marv, we can tell that you have no audio. I'm sorry, that you have no video. I can tell you're not on the computer. But your phone, I can't see how.
Yeah, and the phone is not muted.
It looks like you're unmuted. Now, I just clicked mute, and that puts a red line through your phone.
And now you're back again.
And then I click it again, and your phone, we can see that your phone is activated, and it's giving feedback. So we got challenges. We definitely have some challenges here. I know you've gotten off and tried to get back on.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's got them up somewhere on the computer as well, even if it's not working, and then that's what's making the feedback. I don't know. All right. Sorry, everyone. Yeah, I'd like him to be good before we start. I don't know how long that, we can give ourselves a couple minutes.
Okay, he just said that he has his phone muted to try to unmute again.
Now he just muted himself.
No, I did that. Because the thing is, yeah. So right now, Marv, you're listening in. We've got you unmuted. Right now, you're not muted. But it's we can't. It's not something we're able to control on our end. Because as far as we can tell, you are not muted.
Can we hear you, Marv? Can you talk?
See, no, he can't. He can hear us, but we can't hear him. When we get the feedback, that's Marv trying to talk to us.
Like, oh, Hey, Marv, go steal Mary's phone. Go grab Mary's phone and call us on her phone. Maybe that'll work.
He could also comment, I believe, right?
Like, text it in? Yeah, or go to a different room, perhaps? I don't know. These are just guesses.
No.
So the law for these remote meetings requires that you have to have the ability to hear everything that's being said, and the public has to have the ability to hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't know if Marv can hear what is being said, but clearly no one can hear what he is saying. So it's a little problematic
mm-hmm. to
participate in that manner.
Yeah. Yes.
Does that void the process of the meeting, or can we go ahead and start the meeting without Marv until we get the technical aspect of things taken care of?
You have a quorum. You can get started now. But
okay.
His participation is problematic because, again, no one's able to hear him. So the first time he would have to vote or something else along those lines, it'd be tough to hear him. To Nicole's point, you know, we're in a brave new world with these virtual meetings. So if he wanted to, you know, participate by typing things, you know, I would hope that there would be no tie votes tonight. You know, so if everything was 6-0 and he was typing things, it wouldn't invalidate everything that was being done.
Okay. All right, thanks.
We don't see though where the comments are.
I just texted him to see if he wants to text either me or Tara, you know, at times where he wants to speak, his, you know, have his voice be heard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's another option, that one of us speak for him. So we'll see what, if he responds mm-hmm. to that.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. All right. Then usually I have my phone on mute so that there's no, you know, interruption of the meeting, of course. But in this case, we have somebody in the waiting room.
That's him.
I'm going to take my phone. Oh, that's Marv.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yay! Oh, sounds very clear.
No, we can't hear you at all.
So what did you do, Marv? What fixed it?
I switched to that other phone that I have. I have two different mobile phones. I don't know why the other one was causing a problem, but
okay, well, great.
All right. My
phone off, and 7:10, we are ready to go then. I'd like to call the August 5th, 2020 New Town Borough Council meeting to order. Please join me in a moment of silence, followed by the pledge.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, it's okay. You got your flag up?
Here.
All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. Thank you. Do we have any amendments to the agenda? Okay. Mike, you want to note we had an executive session preceding the meeting?
That's correct. Prior to this meeting, the board held an executive session to discuss a matter of potential litigation.
Okay, thank you. Okay, public to be heard?
I'd like to speak, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
All right. Good evening, everyone. I just wanted to let everyone know that I'm putting together a fundraising event that I'm running for this great borough of ours. It's mm-hmm. in honor of first responders that gave their lives helping others on September 11, 2001. And I'll be selling luminary kits to anyone interested, any resident in the borough. And the goal is to have these luminaries, you know, lining the streets of the borough on Friday night, September 11th, in honor of those first responders that lost their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, it's been 19 years since that horrible day And the proceeds are going to go to Shop with a Cop in Newtown.
Oh, great.
And Shop with a Cop is a national program pairing police officers with children to afford them a better holiday season. Mm-hmm. This is the third year for the program, and Newtown Township, Newtown Borough, and Upper Makefield Police Departments are going to participate. You know, with all that's occurred in 2020, I know the council has pointed out families have lost their incomes impacted severely due to COVID. I think this program, the first year impacted 43 children, the second year 61, and then this year, obviously, we're hoping to grow that. And the focus is on the Council Rock Elementary School students. So I'm just hoping I can get the community to come together, help me honor those who gave all to help others, and to pay it forward in helping those who need our help this year. The luminary kits, they're $20. Each kit will contain 12 luminary bags, 12 candles, some sand. And, you know, it's really to on September 11th, I know Christmas time or the holiday season, everyone lights up and looks beautiful, but it's cold. So I'm hoping September 11th will be a beautiful evening. People can stroll the community. Everything will be lit up. It's for a good cause. We can remember those. You know, 20 years is next year. That would have been the ideal year. But I just think with COVID and families being impacted in the, you know, the elementary school, that I think it's a good opportunity to do it now. So I'm going to hand out flyers throughout the community starting tomorrow. I'll have luminaries probably in possession by next Wednesday. And anyone who's interested, you know, please feel free to reach out to me. My email is john.burke79@yahoo.com. Whether it's helping or buying or whatever, any ideas, I'm open to them, but I would like to maybe to get this rolling starting Monday. So
oh, that's
I just
fantastic.
Wanted to let you know. So thank you.
Good idea. Thanks, John.
John?
Yes.
Have you thought of contacting the Mercantile Group for them to be a at least a contact point for people to contact them to contact you?
I have not. That's a great suggestion. So I definitely would do that. You know, do you have, or is there a way that I don't know who that person or where that group would be the point person?
I'll get you Carol Richardson's information, okay?
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
They were having a board meeting or a general meeting this week, so we could do a follow-up with them. Okay.
That was canceled last night, Bob, because of the power outages in the
community. Yeah.
Okay. They did not have that last night. But I'll relay it to Carol and to a couple of the other members so that you have that.
Thank you. That'd be very helpful. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for the suggestion.
You're welcome, John.
All right, thanks. All right, any other public to be heard? I think you're the only public joining us at the moment, John.
Am I?
I believe so, yeah. Okay. All right, on to the mayor's report.
Okay, we have one special event reminder for everyone. It's the 5th annual Black and White Dinner on State Street, sponsored by the Newtown Theater, which will take place on Saturday, September the 12th, 2020, at 120 North State Street, which is the Newtown Theater, from 6 to 10 p.m. The Rev will be closed beginning at 3 p.m., and there is no rain date for that. I'm assuming that everybody got the special event request form, which I think we'll probably discuss at our Tuesday meeting, since everybody will have the opportunity to read that in regards to an event that's going to be held on for September the 20th. You know, I'm looking at for the date on here, and
September 11th.
Yeah, it's September the 11th up on Pickering Field. So everybody will have the opportunity to review that. We can discuss that and ask for a motion on that on Tuesday evening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
That sounds good. All right. Thank you. All right. Next, President's report, and I have nothing specific to report at this time. All right. Solicitor's report.
We have been working, obviously continuing to deal with all the issues created by the pandemic and the various issues with respect to how meetings from the Zoning Hearing Board or other businesses being conducted within the borough. We've been working on a couple of various zoning matters of different matters that are going before the Zoning Hearing Board. We have finalized the Bird in Hand agreement, and that has been recorded with the Bucks County Recorder of Deeds. We continue to work on the E-code update, and we addressed, been addressing a property in the borough that was the subject of the executive session earlier this evening.
Thank you. Budget and Finance, entertain a motion to approve the exec professional services invoices.
I move to approve the professional services invoices for June 2020.
A second.
Motion, second. Any discussion, questions? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any nays? Motion passes. Nicole?
Sorry. So yes, I just wanted to make an announcement that we did have a resignation on the Newtown Bucks County Joint Municipal Authority. As the process goes, we are announcing it today. We do have an application that council has access to review. And then if everything's okay at our next meeting, we'll make the appointment. If any other applicants would like to put something in, we'd ask for that before Friday or by Friday.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then will there be any a particular acknowledgement of Mr. Johnson and all his years of contribution?
Sure.
Yeah. So or perhaps the sewer authority is doing that, but
I'll figure that out.
All right, we'll talk. All right, thanks. All right, and on to the actual big reason for this special work session, which is to really get ourselves caught up on the zoning and E-code 360 review. So I'm going to hand this over to Julia so that we can work our way through these updates.
Okay, thanks. We have a lot of work to get through tonight. It actually looks more formidable than it really is. There are only a few decisions along the way. I'm going to try sharing my screen. Right, let's see here.
So, Julia, are you going to bring up your discussion guide first?
That's what we're going to do. We're going to go through the discussion guide and.
Okay, so I've got that up, so I'll be able to follow, even though I'm not online.
All right. Well, that's good. Yes, we're going to go through the discussion guide, and as needed, I'll open up some of the other documents. But I think most of the stuff is on the discussion guide. It'll be easy enough to see. And I did send an updated version this afternoon because I got some last-minute information. Hopefully, you're all able to look at that. And it is only a couple changes from what came up on the weekend. Okay, so we're in the discussion guide. So the first chapter that we are looking at is chapter 150, which is the Planning Commission chapter. And I did receive a comment asking to look at section 150-3, Terms of Members. And when I went back to take a look at it, I would agree it looks a little bit confusing because it's talking about putting people on the commission prior to 1974 and doesn't really say very simply that how the terms are staggered. So my suggestion to council is that you allow me and Valentina to rewrite this section so that it is language consistent with the MPC, and which will obviously state that the terms are staggered, that they the length of the term, and that if someone resigns before the end of their term, that the appointment is for the remainder of the unexpired term. Is that okay with everyone?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and then you'll be able to bring that back to us.
Yeah, well, you're gonna see this all at the end when everything gets ready to go to general code. There'll be one great big document and you can take a look at it and see. But I'll also let you all know, I'll be sending things as they get taken care of, I'll put them up so you can take a look and see what the language is. Okay. Anything else on the Planning Commission chapter? Okay. The next chapter is 157, Police. There was a revised version, a couple revised versions that were put up on ShareFile. I had spoken with Chief Sabbath. He made some recommendations to rewrite the chapter. And then there was one request to make a change to section 157-10B, which then talked about the paperwork that the chief has to provide. And I think if you all saw my notice, I had shared this request with Valentina, who recommends that we can say prepare or cause to be prepared, and should be and keep all records and reports required by Pennsylvania law, as well as those necessary for the proper and efficient administration of the police department. The comment that was requested regarding adding information about the bound book of complaints, that was recommended that that be in the policy manual rather than in the code. So are there any comments on that? Or any other comments on the revised police ordinance?
Julia, is that compilation of information kept at the police department or at the borough council?
What, this record book?
Yeah.
Actually, that we need to work out with the chief. I believe it would be kept at the police department, but be accessible by council. But we need to work on that separately. That's not part of the e-code. That would be part of the policies and procedures manual that the police department would operate under.
Thank you.
Julia, to be clear, I want to get through it, but just for the benefit of the public, because you know a lot of the other changes are so similar, or it's so simple. But if you could do a quick, like, you know, 157-6, we're just doing this. 57-7 is just this. So because it's not a major change, it's just like cleaning up to be consistent with where we are now. But if you could do that for the benefit of the public, that would be great. Real quick.
Sure. For the public, the changes to the police chapter were to reflect current practice and to take out references to using Northampton Police, which was used mm-hmm. for a short time when the Borough Police Department was reestablished a number of years ago. Also, the language was changed a little bit to take out, to call it the police department as opposed to the police force. It was rearranged, the information was rearranged within the chapter to make it a simpler list of who's responsible for what. And there were changes to the description of the pay period for the police department. The police department is actually paid on an 80-hour pay schedule, not a 40-hour pay schedule. And mm-hmm. so the we needed to make a lot of changes that were according to that. Other than that, there was nothing, no major changes.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Okay. Sure. Thanks. Okay, chapter 168 is the Recreation Board. There was a request just to rewrite the paragraph regarding appointments and terms and vacancies to the board, just to make it a little bit clearer that members of the board have 5-year terms, and then that the vacancies other than by the expiration of the term, the unexpired term. Any other comments about the Recreation Board chapter?
So I assume this is much the same language that would go into the Planning Commission also.
Yeah, pretty much. The Planning Commission has a little bit more complicated because the MPC has a little bit more in it. The municipalities planning code, for those of you who are unaware of it, and it defines what the Planning Commission can and cannot do. It's sort of a law above ours. Okay, the next chapter is 174.
I have a question. Julia?
Sure, I'm sorry.
You don't have it up on the screen, but I was reviewing it the other day. Does the rec board have responsibility for the maintenance and the budgeting for the maintenance, the physical maintenance of the parks?
As compared- I'm looking right now at the chat. No. There, I'll read you what's in the chat, in the actual chapter that's in our code. Okay. They are supposed to submit an analysis once a year of the recreational area facilities. They make recommendations for any new equipment and operating and so on. The board itself is not responsible for the maintenance.
Okay.
We actually never got to do it because of COVID, but you do have in the file what the recommendations were for 2020.
Do we need to look at that sooner than
later? I mean, it's helpful because basically what'll happen is the girls will put in a, or I shouldn't say the girls, the board will put in a, when the budget time comes, they're going to say, okay, we remember when we gave you that report in February? Well, it looks like XYZ needs to be done. Is that okay? And then council then decides whether or not that's an acceptable repair.
Okay.
So all like, right. For instance, like just a real quick example, the, like, you know, let's say the iron fence needs some work. I mean, unfortunately that's not, you know, it's not cheap. So it may be over, you know, that kind of $1,000 mark that we would just do without, you know, council's permission.
Okay. We'll take that up on another time. I just trying to understand the chain of command so that we have a smooth operation. And when we need to fix something, we can get it fixed if there's a dangerous condition at the parks as compared to regular maintenance.
Gotcha.
But we'll mm-hmm. handle that on a sidebar matter.
Any immediate dangerous condition would somebody would either call into Judy and Judy would notify Nicole and then you know, we would go from there. If it was extremely dangerous, obviously you'd have to tape something off. But there is a process for that in place.
Okay. So. Okay, thank you very much for that clarification. Thank you, Julia.
Okay. All right. Sure. The next chapter, chapter 174, salaries and compensation. We pass an ordinance every year setting the current salaries and compensation. So there are no changes to that chapter. The next chapter is 180, which is Shade Tree Commission. We're going to be talking about that again on October 7th. The next chapter is 196. That's Telecommunications Advisory Commission. This commission is no longer in existence. Therefore, the recommendation is to delete the chapter.
And just for some, you know, relevance or whatever, that was a commission, a joint commission between Newtown Township and Newtown Borough. And then that hasn't been in existence for quite a while.
Right. Okay, chapter 220 is alarms. This chapter is completely out of date. I've talked with the chief. He's trying to find some chapters, some ordinances in other municipalities to look at. We're still trying to find one that is up to date enough for us to even consider. So we're looking for a revised chapter to be discussed at the October 7th work session. The next chapter is 226, alcohol. So the items that were brought to our attention were by general code. The first question was with regard to enforcement, the penalties. And as you know, they have proposed language for summary offenses versus civil offenses early on. And I ran this question past Valentina, and she stated that this penalty indicated in this chapter would be a summary offense, and therefore the $1,000 per day wording that is proposed by general code would be the appropriate choice under number one. In article two, there was a question about licensing. General code proposed. Yes.
Oh, no, go on. I'm sorry. When I was unmuting, I thought you were moving to the next topic. I do have a question about the general topic of alcohol before you're done.
Okay. So the second section was talking about making some minor word changes. And if you all would like, I can hunt for it here on the questions for general code, but they proposed some wording changes, and those were accepted by the solicitor. They were just changing wording to be in agreement with Pennsylvania law. Do you have, Tara, you had a question about alcohol?
Oh, yeah, no, and I have, if you want me to read it, but it's just the wording of the liquor license, so there. So, yeah, no, this was a general question. Actually, I was hoping Keith would be here to ask, and that had to do with the penalties. And so if you have an open vehicle, open alcohol container in your vehicle, then that violates the ordinance, of course, because we don't want people drinking and driving. So this is the scenario, and the scenario is you're leaving your rental house and you have a nearly full bottle of wine and you want to bring it home, and you would zip it up in your cooler and stick it in your trunk, and it would never be anywhere near anybody in the car. You get home and then you put it in your fridge, but you can't do that. You have to dump the whole thing out. So I was wondering, and this may not be the place for it because we're doing just basic updates, but is there room for that, or is that PA law? And actually, Mike might be able to answer that. Are we required to make all of this a summary offense? And obviously, council would have to decide if they want to, and this is not the place for that. But it seems to me that if it's been opened, but it's like recorked, resealed, put back in an inaccessible area of your vehicle, then the whole spirit of the law is it's not violating that. So Mike, what are your thoughts?
So much of the open container law, most of the having alcohol in your vehicle or in other places is going to be covered by existing Pennsylvania criminal code. Mm-hmm. So I think, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think the law recognizes the difference between having an open can of beer in your drink holder in the middle or in between your, in your lap, as opposed to having, you're saying that half open bottle of wine or that other, some other liquor somewhere where it is not accessible for the driver. So I think there is a distinction that is already contemplated by the criminal code on that issue. So I don't think we would have to draw that bright line of a distinction here.
Mm, okay, all right, thanks.
Okay, any other questions under alcohol? Okay, the next section is chapter 333 is on amusements. And the comment from General Code was that currently, we are our fee for a license for amusements, which is paid annually. This would be for like pinball machines, that sort of thing. That is $25, which is the same as apparently as what the tax would be. And they were wondering whether we wanted to change that. Right now, the comment for our solicitor is there's really no need to change the fee in the ordinance unless we absolutely want to. So the question, need to or not? Are there any thoughts? Or just leave it the way it is for now, back and change it? Okay, the second question they had was regard to penalties. And again, according to our solicitor, this is if you violate this ordinance, it is considered a summary offense, and therefore $1,000 per day wording is the correct choice for penalties. Julia, I had a question on this. Yes.
Could you slide?
I had a question for Bob, and let me just ask this first question from our solicitor. What's the difference between a summary offense and a civil offense with regard to our ordinances? Are there any times when we would select the civil offense choice? And Valentina, you kept telling me that you were quoting me chapter and verse about why these are all summary offenses.
Right.
Which one? We have.
There are summary offenses because there are penalties, but there is no potential jail time involved in a summary offense. Misdemeanors and obviously felonies always carry with them a potential for incarceration. Summary offenses do not, unless you don't pay your fines, and then somewhere down the line, the court can incarcerate you for that reason. So this is the difference between not calling it a civil offense. It's just easier to do as far as writing this out as a citation, and it's just a faster process than by having to file something either with the district court or with the common pleas court.
Okay, thanks. Bob, did you have a question?
No, I have a request. Could you slide the marker in the bottom right corner to make the print bigger? See where it says 100%?
Yeah, let's see. Ah, okay. Learn something every day. Is that better?
Oh, for us older people. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I do have this problem where I have little people sitting on my screen. Do you see the same little people I do, or do you get to see the screen
without? You can scroll them up and down. You can pick the people you want to look at.
I know. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So we're moved past.
You need to scroll up now because we're at chapter 333. Now yes. We're up to wherever you're going. Okay. Thank you. It's easier to read now.
No, actually, we're going to be on. Yeah, we're on. Actually, that wasn't. That must have been 233 because the next year is 239. So okay. I apologize for my mistype. Okay, 239 is animals. Again, the enforcement section question that General Code had with regard to the animals, and the recommendation from our solicitor was that this is a summary offense with wording of $1,000 a day. Then there's a proposed wording change to section 239-6C. And this is to add some wording that brings in, that acknowledges that we have a tot lot area in Brian Gregg Park, as well as on at Linton Memorial Park. Is everybody okay with adding that language in there? Okay. All right. Then the next one.
So one quick question on the fines. So the E-code decisions are those worded wrong, and so we're not clicking replace with those. We're doing so because there's always say. Summary offense wording at 1,000/30-day maximum. So we're not going with what their summary offense wording was. We're telling them new summary offense wording for everything.
No. I apologize if that was misunderstood. No, we're going to go with their wording that they proposed early on. It's a lengthy paragraph about the summary offense. And I just like the choices were either $1,000 a day for 30 days maximum or the civil enforcement wording $100 maximum. Those were the two choices we had for the recommendations or whatever else we wanted to come up with. And so we're choosing their wording that talks about $1,000 per day. And that was at the beginning and of their of their analysis.
Okay, and within the individual decisions, it says that /30 days maximum means 4 30-day days.
Yes, up to $1,000 a day per up to 30 days, yeah. So however it's written, I don't have it right in front of me, but that's, yeah, we're not changing their wording, we're using the proposed. Okay.
Julia, in terms of how this works, does this citation go to the magistrate?
We'll have to ask the solicitor how that works.
Yes. Yes, because it's under the jurisdictional limit. It is, I should say, within the jurisdictional limit of the local district justice. So these violations go there. If they go over the jurisdictional limit, then you have to take it to common pleas.
So is the $1,000 under the limit so yes, that yes. we stay at the magistrate level? Okay.
Yes. I think the limit is like $15,000 or $18,000 right now.
But if you had that 30-day element in there, you could be over the limit.
If you were citing them every day, yes. And that's what happens. What you do is sometimes if you're have a very problematic property owner, if you cite them for more $1,000 a day for 30 consecutive days, you're over the jurisdictional limit, then you take that to common pleas, where you can also, in addition to the fines, you can also get some court orders to prevent them from doing what they're doing or to make them, you know, do something that you want them to do.
Thank you.
Okay, are we, we're done with brush, grass, and weeds? No questions there? Okay. Valentina also recommended this whole chapter have some revision just with language. So I will work with her for that, unless anyone had any other comments they wanted us
Julia,
to take a look at.
In this chapter, will you be addressing encroachments on sidewalks and hangover of branches on trees above sidewalks?
Let me take a look at, hold on a second. This talks about not cutting your grass, basically.
It is somewhere. I know it does say it.
I don't think it's in here. I think it's in the streets in one of the later chapters that talks about having to keep the vegetation away from the right of way.
There's a some place.
We'll take a look at it.
I've looked at this, and in some place it talks about this 20% encroachment within the sidewalk boundary within the right of way. So we
right,
just.
Right.
We
so I'm sure saying, I think that's in the late. Bob, I think that's in a later chapter.
Okay.
Hold on to that till we get to sidewalks and in the later chapters that talk about the right of way.
We just need to make these two chapters consistent with each other then. If they're relevant to each other.
Right. Right. Well, we'll look at that.
Okay.
I'll make a note. Okay. All right. Let me note that.
Can we, and as part of the process of your review with the solicitor on this, make it so that the offense is if somebody, well, I guess we need the offense in place to have that tool to be able to then, tell a property the owner that they need to do something, right? So it has to be a problem that you have, you know, the weeds growing. So the way it's written right now, if you have a 1 foot weed growing in the back behind your shrubs and you don't know that it's there, you are officially violating the law. And so I'm wondering, and that could be something to take up when you talk to Mike and or Valentina about this, or Lauren, how can it be worded to give the teeth to be for the borough to be able to cite somebody who is having a problematic property and has not done anything about it after we've told them, but not make it so somebody, you know, with one little hidden weed behind the shrubbery is actually in violation of the law. I don't know if that can be done or not, but, you know, that would be nice.
So you're saying you don't want to hit somebody with a fine right away. You want them to know that there is a problem first.
Right. And like, personally, I don't want to be in violation of the law because I have a weed growing somewhere that I didn't know about. So this is how do we make it so that you are not, if, you know, the borough can tell you to cut them and fine you if needed. And it's a public nuisance to have a gazillion thistle and all kinds of stuff growing. But if you've got like something growing that you didn't know about, then you're not in violation of law. And again, maybe it can't be written that way. And maybe it all comes back to the enforcement. And yes, we put it that way because it gives us the tools for enforcement, even though, you know, your neighbor can't be like, you know, I see you have a weed and call the borough and that's it. You have to pay $1,000.
So I think the way the process is supposed to be set up and supposed to work is a violation is discovered, reported, a notice of violation is issued, giving them sufficient time to correct the violation. Mm-hmm. And if they do, then the matter is closed. And if they don't, then that's when the citation is issued.
So good. So we can make that just clear in the ordinance. That would be great if that's possible, while still giving us the teeth to deal with those, you know, thistle covered properties when we need to.
Is this a citation issued by the police?
Or your code enforcement department?
Okay.
Right, often it'll be your most, for property maintenance issues, it's always by your code enforcement department. The liquor ones may be your police department.
Do we have to specify who issues this?
If it should, at some point in the code, should lay out who has the authority to issue these, but it's you don't have to do it for each one, if that's what you're asking, Bob.
Yeah, well, it's a generic way, you know.
Yeah, and it generically, it's the chief code enforcement officer falls in the umbrella of his or her responsibilities.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Okay, are we ready to move on to chapter 260? Okay, chapter 260 is the UCC, which is the Uniform Construction Code. Again, this chapter needs significant revision and with Barry Isett, and we will be looking at this in October. Chapter 267 is the curfew chapter. The solicitor is suggesting that we retain this chapter. According to the chief, we're really, we don't have to enforce it that much, but he's also recommending that and if we do retain it, then the answer to the question from the general code about whether it's a summary offense or not is yes, that's the enforcement choice we want to make. Does that make sense?
Who decides to call the curfew? Is it an emergency order or is it something else?
It's just in there. It's if you're there after certain, if you're out at night, if you're a youth and you're out at night after a certain hour on weeknights and a different hour on the weekends, you're violating the curfew.
Yeah, right now it's 11 o'clock on weeknights, on basically on school nights, and then 12 o'clock on weekends, and then it lifts at 6 a.m. The one thing I thought is we could lift it at 5 a.m. for those, you know, what should I call motivated youth who might be out, I don't know, jogging at 5 a.m. or something that you have at that ones often, or ones who, you know, have something to do. But the ordinance does permit, if you're on the way from someplace to another place or been given instruction by parents, like, you know, it's after 11 on a weeknight, but your parents sent you to the CVS or something, which was not ours, it's 24 hours, but sent you to the 24-hour market or whatever it was, or you're coming home from a late night studying with your friend, you are not in violation. So this is mainly, it's a toolbox. So if there's some, you know, kids out roaming around, climbing on mailboxes or something, the police can say, hey, what's going on? Or if you've got even like a lone kid out, it's 4 a.m. and, you know, he's walking along looking upset. The police can't stop and do anything at all or say anything we don't have the ordinance. But if we do, then the officer can say, you know, hey, buddy, what's up? You know, you're doing okay. And just check in. So it's a tool and for you. So it has nothing to do with emergencies.
Well, I'm just thinking that will there be new school schedules that, you know, are very goofy hours, maybe 5-6 o'clock in the morning?
Oh my God, are you kidding?
You never know. We just don't know.
Mutiny. The parents of mutiny. No, there's not going to be a 5 o'clock in the morning. And also, if you're going to school, it doesn't matter. This is if you're out like.
Can I read the section of the ordinance here? This will solve it. Defense to prosecution. All right. This is 267.3A. It is a defense to prosecution under this section that the minor was 1, accompanied by the minor's parent, 2, on an errand at the direction of the minor's parent while using a direct route, 3, in a motor vehicle involved in interstate travel, 4, engaged in an employment activity, including but not limited to newspaper delivery when using a direct route, 5, involved in an emergency, 6, on the sidewalk abutting the minor's residence or abutting an immediately adjacent residence of a next door neighbor, if the neighbor did not complain to the police about the minor's presence. Now here's one for you, Bob. Attending an official school or religious activity, or returning home by direct route from an official school or religious activity. And 8, exercising First Amendment rights protected by the Constitution, such as free exercise of religion, freedom of speech, and the right of assembly. 4, had been married or otherwise emancipated in accordance with Pennsylvania law. So I think that pretty well covers it. If you're just standing outside at 3 in the morning, the curfew ordinance allows the police to ask you what you're up to. And basically, Julia, I think that's what the chief was
asking. Guess what? We have to strike married, because now in Pennsylvania, children do not get married. So as of a couple months ago. So we should actually strike the married and just have the emancipated.
Well, let's see. Okay, that married in accordance with Pennsylvania law. I think that's still okay, isn't it?
Not if you're a minor.
Let's check that with our solicitor later.
Yeah, I think it would only work if you were married prior to the law change, but you are still a minor. So for the next like year or two, you could have like a 17-year-old who got married when they were 16, for example. But by the time they turn 18, the curfew doesn't apply to them. And as of like, I don't know, the other month, this summer, minors are not allowed to get married in the state of Pennsylvania.
Well, but you could have been married in New Jersey.
From some other state, I suppose.
All right. So anyway, let me I'll make a note. We'll take a look at that chapter and see if any of that language needs to be changed. So it sounds like everyone's okay with keeping the curfew ordinance in place, or the curfew chapter in place, and with a penalty being the summary offense language, the $1,000 a day up to 30 days, that language that was proposed by General Code. Okay?
All right.
Good. All right, so chapter 282, Fair Housing. So this chapter predates our Human Relations Commission chapter. And since the HRC ordinance actually now replaces this, our solicitor's recommending that we just go ahead and delete chapter 282. Y'all good? Okay. All right. Next is chapter 294, which is fire prevention. We just passed a new ordinance adopting the International Fire Code. So therefore, no new changes are recommended. Okay. All right. The next one requires a little bit of discussion by council. This has to do with garage sales. We have a garage sale ordinance. It only permits you to have 2 sales per year. It has certain dates that you can't use, and they are leftovers from when Welcome Day was on the first Saturday in May or something. And we had a permit requirement. There was a permit fee of 50 cents. We haven't been charging that for quite a while because it costs 50 cents to process the permit. The hours of sale are currently allowed from 9 to 6. The question is, do we still want garage sales and do we want a permit? And if so, there may be some other language that would have to be changed. Otherwise, we can also just delete the chapter altogether. So I open it up for your comments.
Julie, would you like to work? Well, I guess the first question is, do we want one? After that, would you like to work through each, you know, 2A, 3, 5, 6, and 10?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Does anybody want to get rid of having where you get a permit and the borough and the police are aware that you're having a garage sale, that you have to register your garage sale?
I like the idea of a permit because I feel like it then becomes a little bit of a domino. Because then how can, if you don't have a permit, you don't know what's happening, how can you kind of, you know, make sure there's only 2 a year? Does that make sense? I don't know.
Or any other regulation like the hours, like you're conveying information.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that would bring the second question. The reason, I believe the reason that the garage sale ordinance in its current form was created was actually to protect various antique dealers in town who were concerned that people were holding garage sales and essentially running antique dealerships without having a real business. So the question is, do we still want to say that you can only have 2 garage sales a year? So that would be the first question.
What if there's no restriction and somebody decides to, you know, go to the Golden Nugget and like get stuff, and it's not really antiques. Well, I'm sure there's stuff with antique, but you know what I mean? They decide to just get stuff and routinely every weekend have a yard sale, and then their neighbors get annoyed. I would worry that somebody would have like their barn full of stuff and be constantly doing it. And so I think it's in the interest of the borough, interest of the neighbors to have some kind of restriction. I mean, it could be more than 2, but I wouldn't want to give carte blanche for you could have a yard sale every weekend either.
I agree.
When do you get to the level of running a business as compared to a yard sale?
Good question. Mike?
I don't know the answer. Mike or Valentina?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. You know, I think if you're going to be putting something in your ordinance that talks about the frequency with which you can do these, you know, you can't get a permit every week or, you know, for on a consistent basis, that'd be one way of eliminating it. But I do think that's something you'll have to decide whether or not you want to prevent that, whether you want this to be a rare occurrence or you want somebody to be, like you're saying, running a business every week out of their garage. But we would have to take a look about the ability to restrict that. I think we can, but we would just want to make sure.
I mean, you could say once a quarter, once a month.
Yep.
But, you know, we have only, you would not once a quarter. You could say only 4 sales per year. And that basically means if somebody was really deeply cleaning their house, they didn't have to like wait for it all to be ready to put it all out at once, but they could have a couple in a row, but it's not something they're doing all the time.
So do we really think that this is going to be a problem, that there are going to be people who try and do it every weekend?
We've had properties, well, there's one I'm specific I'm thinking of, and that person does not own that house anymore, but where they were just collecting a lot of stuff and it was heaped up in the yard and it was in their barn garage. And sometimes I think they would take it places and do things or sell it. And it was all very amorphous, but it was something that the neighbors talked about. And that just sets off that flag for me that somebody could definitely do that. And yeah, I guess if it was every weekend, you would probably be having a business. But you know, what if you were doing it every other weekend or once a month? And that, you know, we don't know that delineation. But I don't, you know, I mean, maybe nobody would. But what if people do things like that? I had one guy. We cleared out a bunch of stuff. I put it on the Facebook
like area yard sale thing. And usually you expect somebody to be like, oh, I'd like your dollhouse. I'd like your bike. In this case, the guy showed up with his van and took everything because this is what he does and he doesn't live in Newtown.
What happens if you have a whole street that does the yard sale? How many permits would you have to require?
Good question.
I'm sorry, Bob, if you have a what?
The entire street, the Penn Street yard sale.
Like, could you, or if you're a block, could somebody submit one and put all the houses in together that are doing it and all the names of the people and the addresses? Like, I would be okay with that if everybody else is. That's a good thought, Bob. But, and then I do want to get back to Sue's question too about not we.
I think that actually has happened at times, that there's been widespread organized garage sale blocks or whatever.
Does that constitute a special event?
No, it wouldn't.
Why not?
Okay, so can I try to narrow this conversation down a little bit? So I'm hearing that you want permits because you want to restrict the number of sales. Is that right? Am I hearing that right? Because if you're going to make any kind of restriction, you're going to want some kind of permitting system.
And the hours. And we haven't gotten to that yet because
Yeah, we're going to get to that. Okay. Yeah. And then there's some discussion about how many sales per year, whether it's 2, 4, 6, once a month.
I think you could definitely increase that number.
Sounds like it's... So we said four sales a year. Does that sound okay to people?
I would say even 4 to 6. I mean, every other month, whatever.
Well, we need a number. I think 4 is good. We're doubling it. So we're doubling it from 2 to 4. I think that's reasonable.
But that means that someone all could right. have sales 4 weekends in a row. Is that mm-hmm. okay?
Yeah, because for example, they're going to move and they're cleaning their things out. And so they do that and then they're done, I guess.
So we're okay with that. I don't care if someone has whatever weekend. I'm just asking.
No.
I'd be okay with that.
I'm fine with that.
Because if the neighbors complain, right. You can say,
so you're done.
Four, you know. What do you think?
Well, if you're allowed 4 per year, you're allowed 4 per year. Once you've had it, that's it. You're done.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So if we're going to restrict the number of sales, all right, then the hours from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., I don't know about you, but when I put out stuff for a yard sale, people are already coming at 8.
Yeah, 8 is standard, and then at 7:30 and hover. So, like, 8 makes more sense.
Okay.
Is everybody good with that? Because 9 a.m. is like half the good stuff is already gone by then for people who are real yard sale hoppers.
Yeah, as far as I know, I agree. They do usually start earlier.
So, 8? A.M. okay?
8 or 7.
Our noise ordinance.
The noise ordinance is 7, right?
7. Well, no. Well, weekends it's later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then let's make it 8.
All right. 8 a.m. and to 6 p.m. I mean, I don't know about you, but my yard sales are done by 1 or 2. But that's not to say that it couldn't go on till 6.
Why 6? Why not 7? It's like, do we know why 6?
Nope. I'm sure it was an arbitrary decision.
Because in terms of like, if it's summertime, I mean, if it's light out, you're out there. And if you don't want to interfere with other people's, you know, dinner and bedtime, I guess. But if it went till 7, I don't know if that affects anybody or if it would be a nuisance to the neighborhood if they were done at 7.
I think leaving it 6, you know, since it's 6 now, I don't see any reason to change it. There's no pressing need to have it go later. Like Julia said, they're usually over far before that. You're giving people the flexibility to go lower, but longer, but they don't.
Mm-hmm. All right,
8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Okay, dates of sale. Right now, you're not permitted to have them on Sundays. You're not permitted to have them on holidays. Is everybody good with that?
I think we should delete those.
What was that?
I think we should delete those. I don't think we should restrict Sundays and holidays.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is everybody okay with that?
Yeah, because Sunday,
okay. I don't have an opinion.
Yeah, one community.
Okay.
So I'm looking at the ordinance. I don't see the Sunday.
It's in there.
305-6?
It says, all garage sales shall be conducted only between the hours of 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. and no permit shall be issued for such sales.
Oh, it's on hours of sale.
Yes, some hours of the dates are restricted elsewhere.
That's weird. That should have been under the prohibited sale dates.
Yeah.
That's why I wasn't looking under hours of sale.
All right. So then the dates that are prohibited, that first Saturday in June, from the first Saturday in December, is the house tour, holiday house tour.
I don't think you should have a yard sale during the house tour.
Is anyone going to have a house, really a yard sale in December?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
Well, yes.
Well, a lot of people come to town.
I actually think that's okay.
Yeah, I agree. Because people would take advantage of it and they'd be out there with their long johns and their like woolen socks. Trying to make some money, and
if you work outside of those houses, it's hectic enough. You don't need to have, yeah. The neighbor next door also,
gosh.
I don't know. This is my opinion.
No, that's right. The people on the lines, somebody would have a yard sale literally next door, and it would be disruptive. It's a good point.
Yeah, right. I definitely think house tour is a good day. Now, market day has been shifting around a lot, so I guess it's hard to really designate. I think there always there, although I don't see it here, I think there was a desire to not have people trying to take advantage of the people coming into town for something like Market Day.
And that's concentrated in one area, whereas the house tour is all over town. But you're right, it does.
So that one, the June date was Welcome Day. I think we can just forget that one altogether. And the other event, Market Day, has been moving around. It's now in October. It was in September. I don't know if they're going to move it back again. So, I guess the only way you could put it in here would be to say not on the day. Judy, are you going to let Bernie in?
I just did. Yeah. All right. But I mean, I guess you could just put Market Day without specifically, right? You don't have to be more specific than that. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a September date or an October date. If it's just Market Day, it's whatever it is that year. But I think that's a valid point, because especially with Market Day, the Historic Association is still their number one fundraiser, and they get all these crafters, and so you really, out of respect for all their efforts and these crafters that are coming, spending their day trying to make a few bucks, do you really want to have people having garage sales and kind of competing with that? That's my one observation.
And more traffic. Mm.
Yeah. I see Market Day and the House Tour Day to be the only two major ones I would want to see prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's not somebody that has their annual Market Day yard sale that none of us know about, and they'll be gravely disappointed because, people always drive up to their house after going to Market
Day. I think
you're right. And that's, if we can add that. So Mike, can we add the name of a day that an event without specifying the day?
I'm not on mute. Nope. Yes, you can. You can say a specific event that happens within the borough, and it is the responsibility of the person to know that even when they come to file for their permit, they'll be turned down because it's on that day. So.
Okay. Got it. Okay, thanks.
All right, and then does the borough want to impose any penalties if you do it, if you don't violate, if you violate the ordinance?
Well, I guess based on the conversation we just had about competition during market day and the house tour, I guess I would say yes. Because if we don't impose penalties, we say you can't do it then, but what would be the disadvantage? I mean, people could just do it anyway.
What's so Valentina, you had made some comment that we have to, if we're going to keep this ordinance, we have to do some revisions because there are a few items in here that are not permitted now. You're nodding your head, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes restricting commercial sales for nonprofits or religious institutions can be an issue. So I would just want to do a little more research on that.
Okay. Yeah, well, for example, during the house tour, St. Luke's always has a wreath sale, and that's just part of all the traditions. And the Presbyterian Church and St. Luke's both have like food available and luncheons. So these are kind of, these are fundraisers for them. It's not a yard sale specifically, but that would make sense then to clarify that so that we're not impinging anywhere we shouldn't.
All right, so are you, anything else that anybody wants to look at this chapter?
So just to go back to the beginning, Julia? So we're saying no fee, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Does anybody want a fee
for the permit?
No fee.
No fee. Okay. No. Okay. So our, and I guess this is just a mechanics thing, our fee schedule says that the fee is, that there is no fee. Do we still need to have a statement in the ordinance that says the fee would be according to?
If there's no fee, okay. You don't have to say anything about it. Or you could say there's no fee, but if there's no fee, you shouldn't reference to the fee schedule.
Okay, so we'll just say no fee. Okay, all right, good. All right, moving on. So the mobile home issue is that we have all kinds of regulations for mobile home parks, but they are in the wrong place in our ordinance. The municipality's planning code requires that all of that information be in our saldo chapter, not in our zoning chapter. So Valentina has drafted an ordinance, and there are no regulation changes in it, as far as I know. They are just moving things around where they ought to be. So did anyone look at that and have any questions about it? If not, just to let you know that we're going to talk in a few minutes about the telecommunications changes that need to be made. And what we've decided to do is that will also be written as a new ordinance, but we will combine it with the mobile home ordinance. So we're only having to worry about pass one ordinance instead of two, if that makes sense.
In terms of advertisement, right?
In terms of advertising, and because it's changed to the zoning and the saldo, it has to go through planning and all that extra review process that the rest of the ordinance doesn't have to do.
Yeah, we bundle them together. Yeah, that makes
sense. Yeah. So if you look at the mobile home ordinance and you have any specific questions, just email them to me and I will get the answers for you. Okay. So the next one, I just found out by talking with our zoning department that this is just part of the saldo chapter that talks about what the applicant who's doing a subdivision land development has to do and who is responsible for sending the plans and applications to all the various agencies. And what it used to was is that they sent it to the water company and the sewer company and the Department of Health if that was appropriate. And then they gave the borough money and copies of the plans, and the borough then sent it on to the Conservation District and the Bucks County Planning Commission. Well, that is no longer the case. So if you'll see the green editing, that is changing that wording that requires the applicant now to apply directly themselves to the Bucks County Conservation District and the Bucks County Planning Commission. The borough is no longer involved in that. So putting that change in. Any questions on that one?
The Bucks County Conservation District and the Bucks County Planning Commission would still report back to the borough in terms of results.
Yes. In fact, I think they also have to provide the applicant has to provide the borough evidence that they have actually submitted their applications to those two agencies. And we always get a letter from the Planning Commission. Bucks County Conservation District will also send a letter.
Okay, all right.
The next section, as I mentioned before, I had listed a whole bunch of things on here about antennas and so on, and talking with Valentina, and she was working with someone else in her office who is an expert on telecommunications ordinances, and they have determined that there is quite a bit that needs to be changed in our ordinance with regard to telecommunications, so that's going to be part of another ordinance, so we don't have to talk about it now, but you will see it in September. Okay, so then the next items that we're going to be talking about are changes to the first to the saldo that you already have approved. We've talked about them before. We then sent these changes onto the Borough Planning Commission as a courtesy to ask for their input, and they had some comments back on a few of the items. And so I'm bringing them back to you now. Once we settle these things, they're going to be put into a large ordinance that Valentina has already drafted that we will then be sending around for the normal process of both planning commissions will look at it again, and it will be advertised for a public meeting, a public hearing to adopt. And so I wanted to bring these back to you based on the conversations that I had at the planning commission, the Borough Planning Commission, and see if you are in agreement with them or whether you would like to stick with what we had originally decided. So the first one is with regard to the number of printed sets of drawings that the borough requires from an applicant for a subdivision land development plan. And if you'll recall when we talked about it the last time, originally we wanted 19 sets. This was in the days before digital communication. Now everything is done digitally, but we also need a few printed sets. Borough Council had decided that it wanted 5 complete printed sets, obviously a digital copy that got shared with everyone, and that we wanted 10 additional copies of certain plans, that being the record plan, the landscaping plan, and the grading slash public improvements plan. But those are the drawings that most people outside of the engineer and the zoning officer would be needing to review. The Bucks County, or the, excuse me, the Newtown Borough Planning Commission thought there should be some more sets and wanted to increase the number of printed sets to 6, and also wanted to add the request that additional printed copies as requested in case they wanted more at a particular time. So I'm going to ask council what they'd like to do.
I like that addition of adding additional printed copies as requested. So that way if we need to go up to 19, we can't, which we won't, but it does allow for that flexibility. And when they got to 6, they definitely counted through who might be using it and so on. So.
I assume additional printed copies will be away from the sentence that says application shall be accompanied. So, you know, first the application's only accompanied with the 6, and then requests for additional ones would come later, but they don't need to do those up front.
Right. And we can do the 5, the 6, the 1 digital, and the 10 copies of those specific plans, and then any other additional copies as requested. That would happen later, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we've struck out the zoning hearing board decision 6 additional copies. Is that because then we could just have the additional particular copies as requested, and we would request them for the zoning hearing board? Or is there another reason that was struck?
No, we don't request anything from the zoning hearing board. The zoning hearing board has their own application and their own requirements for how many drawings they want. We have nothing.
So in that case, it'll just go through that way. Right. Okay.
I have a question about at the end of the process, do we maintain the digital copy in our records or what? What are we supposed to keep when we're all at the end of the process?
By we, do you mean the borough or you as
borough,
the council
person? Borough.
Well, the borough keeps a full printed set. They also have the record set. The final version of everything gets signed off by everybody. They get a copy of that too. The problem was we had 19 copies that all had to be, we didn't need to keep 19 copies in the end, but we needed to keep one.
Can we go completely digital record keeping?
We have to have one printed something.
Nah, if the cloud fails, we need something real.
But that doesn't really, that's really not affected by this section because, even if we got 100 copies from them, we don't need to keep 100 copies. However many we keep has to do with the requirements for keeping records, and that's determined elsewhere. Mm-hmm. This is how many copies when the applicant comes in and produces the application, like Court and State comes in and says, all right, I'm coming in with my preliminary plan. How many copies do you need? And you say, well, okay, well, we used to need 19, but we don't. So we're going to say, give us, all right, if you want 6 printed, complete printed sets, we need 1 digital copy of your full set. And then we want 10 additional copies of each of these additional drawings, but just to know, we may be asking for another couple copies of some drawings later.
Are we going to address record keeping in another ordinance?
Record keeping is defined by the Pennsylvania Museum Commission as rules on how many records you have to keep of things. That's not ours. That's not from us.
So we're compliant with a state statute then?
With that, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so does everybody want to increase this to 6? You okay with that?
Who gets the 6? Why do you need 6 and not 5? Where do they go?
Well, most of them are the Planning Commission members and engineer?
Mm-hmm. Right. Borough Hall, you have to have one at Borough Hall for the public to look at.
Most of the copies that used to get sent paper-wise to the different agencies for their review, they all wanted digital now anyway. We used to send a paper copy to the water company, for example. They only wanted digital. All those distributions are no longer hard copy. So the hard copies would be like, send a hard copy to the Shade Tree Commission, send a hard copy to the Planning Commission, send a hard copy to have a couple down at Borough Hall so people could go look at them. And then you need to have a copy in the file. So actually, the original number that when I was first talking to our zoning officer originally, he said, 3 would be plenty. So, but there are people who would like to have full printed sets. On the other hand, you could have a full print that's 5 pages long, and really, as a member of Borough Council, or as a member of the Planning Commission, or as a member of the Shade Tree Commission, you really only look at the record plan, the landscaping plan, and the grading and improvements plan. You don't really care about the cross-section of curbs, or the technical details of the underground water detention basin or something, things that the engineer might look at, but members of council are really just going to look at how it's laid out, how it's landscaped, how it's graded, That's really all we care about. That's really all the Planning Commission cares about. That's really all the Shade Tree Commission cares about. So those 10 additional copies should really cover those needs.
Mm-hmm. Judy, are you online?
I am.
What do you think about the number of copies? Because you're the person who handles the paper.
No, it's not her. It's zoning.
Who do they go to?
It goes through the zoning office.
Oh, okay, so I'm thinking of, you know, who's doing the work to move all this paper around, and if it's going to the zoning guy person, then it's not. Judy may coordinate it, but she doesn't have to handle it, right, Judy? Is that right?
Right. Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything, I tend to be involved in sometimes in the distribution of those plans or what have you, because like in the example of the Planning Commission members, you know, maybe they'll stop in during the day. I'm the one that's there versus, you know, the zoning officer necessarily. But yeah, it's kind of a team effort. But yes, the zoning officer basically manages the process.
But when the application is finally approved, what do you do with it?
Bob, I think this is a discussion for another day. Can we talk about this later? We can talk about the whole SALVA process.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, all right. Is there any more comments on the number of copies we need to get? Are you okay with the Planning Commission's recommendation?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Fine with giving them their one more. At least we got it down from 19. I'm fine with giving them their one more. At least we got it down from 19.
Yes. And actually, we're trying to preserve trees. If you figure the diameter of these rolls of paper, you know, we probably saved a few. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then the next item is, let's see here. Next one was the discussion of change of the term change from street trees to shade trees. And the Borough Planning Commission from street trees. However, I checked, and the term in the Pennsylvania Borough Code is actually shade tree, not street tree. The definition of shade tree has to do with being along the street and in the right of way. So, I personally am not in favor of going back to street trees. My recommendation is we stick with shade tree. Any thoughts from you?
I agree.
Consistent with Shade Tree Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Can we add, they said definition for street trees, can we add the phrase street tree to note in the definitions to note that a street tree is a shade tree? So there's no confusion?
I think. Or the point it would be the other way around, Tara, that shade tree refers to being a street tree?
A street tree, what you think of as a street tree is actually a shade tree. And so we're using the word shade tree, I guess. So
right.
Is in somebody's vernacular or their mind what they thought it was is actually a shade tree per the Borough Code.
Right. So I think we should be consistent with the Borough Code.
Mm-hmm. But we could have a clarification in the definition section.
All right. I think we'll look at the definition, but I believe that that's already clarified in how it's described. Okay. Tree protection. All right. So the Shade Tree Commission had recommended that we change the diameter of trees that are protected in a subdivision land development activity. This is talking about the diameter of a tree that we consider worth protecting. And if you take it down, there's a problem. And if you don't protect it, there's a problem. In the current SALDO, it is 16 inches in diameter. The Shade Tree Commission had recommended a diameter of reducing that to 8 inches. The Borough Planning Commission thought that 8 was too small, and they argued back and forth between 10 and 12 and came up with 10. No particular justification for that particular number, but that was their recommendation.
I had a conversation with Rich Mowry from TNT, and just because he happened to be at my property looking at some things that needed to be done. And he noted that, and I wasn't going to him saying, so which do you think? It was more just like the conversation we're going through the borough code. He's on the Lambertville Shade Tree Commission. He's aware of like a number of the ordinances in the area. He was describing how some were too strong, some were too weak, depending on what it was, et cetera, et cetera. He said, 8 inches is the gold standard. What his experience is that a developer will kind of hedge it a bit, or the people who are doing the measurement will hedge it, so that if you say 10 inches, you're going to end up saving like 12 to 14 inch trees, but the tree that's actually 10 inch is, they're going to measure it as being bigger than it is. And so if you're ahead of the 8 inch tree, you might end up saving the 10 inch trees. And obviously that's not how they're supposed to be, but that's how it tends to happen when you have people taking land down. The other thing he noted, which we think of land development as being a empty property, a subdivision, something like that. But we are seeing a lot of the tear downs and rebuilds, which is something that, you know, we discussed prior, that we wanted to perhaps, you know, minimize that in some way. So this would be me advocating for the 8 inches based on his thoughts that we're actually going to see a lot more land development than we think we are, and that 8 inches is considered the gold standard, and that the developers tend to fudge it a bit.
Just to be sure, just to remind you that if someone is doing a tear down and just building a new house on their property, that's not considered subdivision land development.
All right, thank you. Good
yeah.
point.
Yeah, so this is going to be anything bigger than that. So
that's true.
Yeah. So I would say, the Shade Tree Commission had done their own research and thought 8 inches was the standard. And so I was going to support their opinion in any case, but now hearing confirmation from another expert, I am further entrenched on thinking we should stay with the Shade Tree Commission recommendation.
I agree with that.
All right. Okay, so we're going to stick with 8 inches. Any other comment? Okay. All right. So the Shade Tree Commission, right now, currently the way the saldo is written, if you want to take down a tree of the protected diameter, and currently it's 16 inches, but we're going to change that to 8, that the borough may, but is not obligated to accept the fee in lieu payment for taking down the tree. The Shade Tree Commission had proposed the replacement schedule. That is, if you are going to take down an 8-inch to 16-inch diameter tree, that you needed to replace it with one tree. If it's 16 to 31 inch diameter tree, you had to replace it with two, so on, creating this table. The Borough Planning Commission took a look at it. They were not supportive of a tree replacement schedule. They preferred to have only the possibility of fee in lieu. So I bring it back to council, and I do apologize. The Shade Tree Commission had presented this before when we were looking at this a while back, but I had left this table off your discussion. So you did not have an opportunity to look at it before. So are there any comments about whether you want to consider tree replacement? My assumption is that the tree replacement would be on the property of the developer, and that you couldn't count the trees that you otherwise had to supply as shade trees along the street, that this is in addition to that requirement.
Why did the planning commission, I'm sorry.
So my opinion, I had always thought when this was brought up by Shade Tree Commission that it was actually a making things more stringent. I thought there was some other tree replacement that they were making, you know, again, more stringent. That appears to not be the case. This is actually less stringent. So I'm actually in favor of staying with fee and not having tree replacement. That gives the borough and Shade Creek Commission more control over where, you know, trees should go with the fees that are collected.
Mark? I'm not sure that's true. Is that correct? I thought before it was you only had to replace, I mean, the fee in lieu is still an option, the borough's option, not the developers. But I thought before it said that you had to replace a tree over 16-inch with another tree. And this is making that possibly two or three or four trees. Is that not true?
No.
Okay, so we gotta confirm that, because that's kind of what I had heard too, but all the discussion seems to have been that there was no such just replace a tree with a tree. So that's one thing we have to confirm. If that was the case, then I'm in favor of this, of a more stringent tree replacement. If there was no tree replacement before, I don't think we should put this in.
All right, I'm looking up right now.
Marv, are you saying that what it would be in terms of stringency, that somebody may choose just, oh, it's no big deal because the fee I'd pay would be cheaper than the cost to replace the tree anyway?
No, the fee is much more. The fees are much more than the cost of these replacement trees. So this is dramatically decreasing the hurdle for a developer.
Right. So the 2.5-inch caliper tree, if that's $600, but your fee is much more than that, then the borough has more flexibility in terms of then using the funds for planting trees.
Right.
Yes,
right.
And that's what all the discussion seems to have been. Again, if there was something, then there it said, oh, you only have to replace it with one tree
no
matter what. But again, that's what I at one time had thought. But none of the discussion since then has pointed in that direction.
No, the way it's currently written is if you want to take down the tree, I guess the borough's choices are, no, you may not take it down, or if you take it down, give us money. And the calculations, like it came up actually at the Bucks County, the Borough Planning Commission, is that if you have a great big tree, let's say you have a 31-inch diameter tree, and you're taking it down, the fee in lieu of taking down, based on the calculations in our fee schedule, is a pretty big amount. If you have to replace that tree with two and a half caliber trees, that's really cheap. And so you say, okay, fine, I'm going to take it down and I'll just put in two trees, as opposed to, well, maybe I won't take it down because you really are going to charge me a lot of money. So that is...
And in fact, what's going to happen is because we're reducing the diameter from 16 inches to 8 inches, it's actually going to have the effect of causing the fee to go up because the fee kicks in earlier.
So can I make a suggestion? Shade Tree Commission is still reviewing their ordinance. There's a new member. Can we review this again later? I know somewhere in Saldo, it talks about a 2.5-inch tree. I know it does because one of my questions was, why is it 2.5-inch in Saldo and 1.5-inch in the Shade Tree ordinance? So somewhere it's in there. But can we put this on hold till we review the Shade Tree Commission ordinance?
Well, I guess what I would recommend, because of the whole issue of having the Saldo and zoning ordinance changes have to go through the multiple review process, is that if we just leave it as it's currently written and change the diameter of a protected tree to 8 inches, but take out the fee, the tree replacement schedule, leave the fee in lieu language the way it currently is, let it go through the process, let it get passed. We can always come back at a later date and update the ordinance with another ordinance change. And that way we aren't holding up a very long and laborious process. We can get our e-code moving so things can get codified, but we can still go back and revisit this requirement. Is that okay with everyone?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, so let's do that. So I'll change, so we're good with keeping the 8-inch diameter tree. So we'll make that change and we won't have the tree replacement table in there. And we'll leave the language in there for fee in lieu. And we'll also keep the language that was proposed by the Shade Tree Commission that the money that we get from the fee in lieu is held in escrow for replacement and maintenance of shade trees and public trees, as opposed to how it was currently written. We could use it for anything, in any kind of repairs in the borough. You already agreed to that the last time we looked at this.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's good.
And one question that's a little bit off topic, but so the fee in lieu is actually in the fee schedule. On the one hand, probably this won't be passed so soon that this matters anyways, but I guess we would have to somehow amend that fee schedule to take into account the 8 to 16 inches if this actually does go into effect.
They put in the smaller diameter. Yeah.
Yeah, how the fees would build up starting with 8 inches instead of starting with 16 inches.
Right, yeah, okay, well that's a good point. I'm actually keeping a running list of fee schedule changes, so let me make a note of that.
And I guess, Julie, all I would ask is make sure that there is nothing in there that actually says you only have to replace one tree no matter what.
Okay, I'll make sure. Okay. So then moving on to the zoning chapter and the comments that the Planning Commission had, the Borough Planning Commission had about zoning. Okay, this got a little bit confusing. So there is a use called limited village retail, and it is a like a small retail kind of use, like art galleries, antique stores, handicraft shops, flower shops, boutiques, tea rooms, and coffee shops. And currently, the way our ordinance is written, you can only have this kind of use in an existing building. And you, council talked about this before and agreed that we didn't really need to have that requirement. This primarily concerns the V1 and V2 district. The V1 district is North State Street. And the V2 district starts at Penn and goes out. The second of the other, so the, excuse me, the Borough Planning Commission seemed to be okay with deleting this requirement in the definition for the limited village retail. But later on, we'll look later on, is that when it was talking about whether if that use was permitted in either V1 or V2, they put that up, the requirement back in, which didn't really seem to make much sense to me. So we need to decide what we want to do. That if you had, let's say you had a building on North State Street and it burned down and you built a new building on that same lot, that you would not be allowed to put any of those uses in that building, because it was a building that was newer than the ordinance, which didn't seem right to me. And remember, of course, that for this use, it's actually by special exception, if you're going to have it anyway. The other item that came up for discussion with the Planning Commission was the restriction that if you have a tea room or a coffee shop, that you could only have food service in those two types if you had no more than 12 seats. And we had discussed it before and thought that we really didn't need to worry about that. The Borough Planning Commission didn't agree with deleting that requirement.
Can we talk a little bit about why they didn't agree, what their thought was?
Well, there was some confusion and some concern that like a great big restaurant would move in, which they can't because the restaurants aren't allowed by the zoning ordinance right now in those districts. There was some worry about whether it would detract from the feeling of those streets. On the other hand, if you looked at the V2 district, that's where Alan's building Steepleview. And based on this, if he's not building in a T&D, he built a new building, he could not have a tea room, a coffee shop, a flower shop, a handicraft shop, or any of those things in those buildings.
No, I'm sorry. I meant the food service limited.
I think the limit, the size, you know, that you, their concern, the Borough Planning Commission's concern was that you would end up having a much larger enterprise.
It just is confusing because most of our places can fit more than 12 people now.
Right. The coffee room is in the different district. The TC district.
So, this is like, say, North State Street, and it's mostly residential there. So, the idea is you can have a few things because we do. But I know we had, thought, well, why limit it to 12? But imagine, for example, the building that Solutions is in, and you've got that whole big old house there. You've got two front rooms, the original living room and parlor, and then a rear room. And I forget what's back there, but I know there's like a kitchen and like a sunroom or something. So say they decided that they want to have a like tea room, which included sandwiches and all kinds of stuff. And basically it's a restaurant. And they're going to have more than 12 because they can fit it. So would that then become disruptive? You know, you've got theater on one side, but you have residences on the other side. And would that be an issue? And is this the kind of thing that the Planning Commission was thinking of?
Maybe.
Well, but in the V1 district, you're not allowed to have a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can have the limited service. And in order to have, you also still have to provide the parking that you need. So that somewhat restricts what you can do.
Would as well, right. And we're not, I mean, we've got Mom's Bake at Home and the dog shop, and those are small service, like food, takeout. I think she has one table if you want to eat in. So it's not fully a restaurant. And so the limited use bit, I just want to make sure we're not, saying these businesses can't be there. That's separate from the seating as well.
They're there right now, so no matter what happens, they're still there.
If
they are environmental, they're a non-conformity, and they're already in. So that's not an issue.
So the Planning Commission was mainly concerned about something coming in and having more seats.
Right.
People. Yeah.
Okay.
I still think we should delete it. I don't understand their concern. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, but the question is, are we still not permitting it?
Mm-hmm. Pardon me?
So no, I'm getting some from behind here. Sorry. So the question is, do we still want to limit the number of seats that are permitted in a tea room or a coffee shop in the sections in town that only can that permit this limited use? So let me look at V2.
I say no.
So we want to allow it to be bigger?
Yeah, I think the changes that council agreed to previously are the correct ones.
Why is that? Like, why not have a limit on seating?
Because it's already limited. Right? I mean, it's redundant. It seems like we're trying to protect somebody. It's not logical.
Yeah, well, I think the protection is because it's a residential area, mainly, with a smattering of things here and there. You can open something, but it's mainly.
But you already can't. You can't open a restaurant, Julia said. So.
Right. But a tea room or coffee room shop.
Right. But Yeah.
What is a tea room?
Good question, Bob.
They have tea and crumpets and little
yeah, but
there was a sign. Oh, sorry. I was going to say before COVID.
And little sandwiches.
Doilies.
Before yeah, COVID, there was a sign for a bubbly tea room on State Street, but not that end.
Oh, yeah.
A coffee shop or a tea room?
Yeah, they used to be very popular, tea rooms. It's an older concept.
But this would mean that something like
the
couldn't go there.
Right.
That yeah, so.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me either.
Which doesn't make sense to you, Nicole?
No, I was just saying, I mean, something like that you're describing doesn't seem like it would be, you know, too much of a nuisance. I mean, gosh, the movie theater is right there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So mainly it's not getting too big. And so I don't know why 12 was picked. Basically, I like the idea that you have a limit. And Sue, what I'm hearing you saying is the limit is naturally occurring by the size of the buildings.
I am. And again, if we were to have the coffee room on that block instead of where it is, I think that's just fine. And it has more than 12 seats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh. So do we want to still cap it but make it bigger, you know, 15, 18, or do we just want to not, you know, I think the Borough Planning Commission was concerned about just too many people and too much going on, but you're right, it did go all around.
I think that we have first of all, you're only allowed to do it by special exception, which means you have to go to the zoning hearing board, which means the neighbors can come in and say, wait a minute, where are all these people going to park? Mm-hmm. And if you're saying, well, it's a tea room and it's only got 12 spots, and so they're only gonna make three, you know, there'll only be three parking spaces used on the street, it's not a big deal, excuse me. If it happens to be one of the buildings that already has a rear parking lot and can accommodate more, both in the size of the room and the fact that they have the off-street parking, I would have a hard time arguing that you could only have 12 seats if they can accommodate it. And you can't have a restaurant in those sections, so you can't build something that's larger anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically this letting the special exception cover that, because I do agree with the idea of that there should be a limited number of people there based on the mainly residential aspects of it. Right, if we're letting special.
But remember, there's residential aspects are in the V1 district, which is north state. We're not so residential in V2 at the other end of town, going out south on State Street. That's V2.
Yeah. Do you know why they limited it to 12 initially for?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea why they did that, unless they were trying to protect. And a lot of things in the old zoning ordinance were to protect existing businesses, existing owners, lots of that stuff was done that way to kind of keep the competition down. But I know that North State Street have been very protective of that and trying to protect its atmosphere. So I certainly understand that, but I think that And at the very least, I don't think it belongs in the definition, because if you want to make different requirements in B1 and B2, then you can do that. But to have the definition for both to be this limiting is a problem.
Yeah. So, all right. We want to show particularly in that we want it. We don't want it to impact the, as you said, the nature of the neighborhood.
I just would hate for it to at all preclude someone from wanting to start a new business because they can only put 12 people inside. I mean,
that's a good point.
If we want progress on the street, I mean, I don't know. I because it is going to be an exception no matter what happens, it's going to have to go in front of everyone. I think it sounds like a really old thing that just, for whatever reason, sat there for what, I don't know when this was brought up or like last revised, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll leave it to the special exception application.
I mean, that's my opinion. I don't know how everyone else feels.
Okay, All right. So if I'm understanding what people are saying is that you're okay with deleting B, that it has to be in an existing building, and you're okay with deleting D, saying that you have that we're limiting the number of seats to 12. Yeah?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Yes. And the next is the bed and breakfast. And as the zoning ordinance is written right now, you can only have a bed and breakfast in a building that is in a zoning district that has been designated as an historic resource by the borough, which I assume means the historic district. And we all agreed the last time around that there was no need for that restriction, that we could have that, why that's in there, who knows. For some reason, the Borough Planning Commission disagreed again, and they said, oh, no, it should only be in the historic district. I disagree with them, but I open it up to you.
Marv, why did they disagree?
I don't remember any particular reason.
Yeah, I think the discussion veered off into having bed and breakfast pop up all over town and Airbnbs and all the rest. It kind of got off track. And, you know, it didn't make sense to me. So.
I mean, in particular, in my mind, bed and breakfast have specific rules and limitations. And, you know, I think in all likelihood, if somebody wanted to put up with those rules and limitations, they would want it to be a more historic property just to attract, you know, clients. But if somebody decided not to, that's, you know, their choice.
Great. Okay. So is everybody in agreement with taking out the designation as mm-hmm. a historic district by the borough section and allowing bed and breakfast everywhere?
So, yeah, because you're in a residential area either way, and you could be one house outside the historic district, but you could still have even a historic.
Sure. I'm thinking of some really nice houses that are not in the historic district that just got expanded and have certainly enough room to be a bed and breakfast. And if they can meet all the requirements that you have to have in order to run one, why not? You know, there's really no difference. As far as I can tell.
Right. The main stopping thing is all the requirements, as you described. Right. Somebody can't just right. shingle, so.
Right. Okay. All right. Now we're back again. We're almost done here. We're back again to this limited retail service use, and we're talking about the V1 district, which is north, and the whether you can have the limited retail use in a building that, whether it had to be in a building that was in existence at the time of the ordinance, but not in a new building. And we had decided before, and we decided a couple minutes before, that we didn't want that restriction. Are you okay with continuing with not having the district, the
So Julia,
not having this restriction.
Is this the same example of something burning down and getting rebuilt?
Yes, the same thing. And in the V, in either one, yeah. So in V1, it's more likely to say, okay, it's already built up. So one of those buildings burns down and you build a new building, you wouldn't be able to put in that use. And then the second thing, the one below this here is on, you know, in the V2 district down past Penn Street, where Steepleview is going to be, that if any new buildings got built down there, they could not have limited village retail service use in them. I don't know what that would lead. So you couldn't have, a small shop.
Wait, you couldn't do that? Wouldn't the overlay for Steepleview take precedence?
Well, if Steepleview is built as a TND, then in that, yes, you could. But if you just build buildings that are not in a TND, then no, you could not. So, for example, we have the empty lot where the tarp house was.
Mm-hmm.
if a building got built down there, a new building, you could not put limited village retail use in it. Whereas the building right next door, you could. So that doesn't seem to be fair to me. So if you bought the house that was Eric Johnson's, you could put a tea shop or a coffee shop or something in it, but on the empty lot, if you built a building there, you could not.
Right, right. And do you know why they disagreed with that?
No. There was a lot of discussion about preserving the old town and not wanting a great big restaurant to move in and so on.
Sure.
But you can. I don't know. I think there was some talk about the idea of people specifically targeting to try and do that, but you know, especially if something's in the, you know, historic district, then you can't just tear it down to build a new building to put something in anyways.
Yeah, because I want, you know, we value their input and we're basically disagreeing with a bunch of their things. So, and I understand with some things, you know, it may be that there's more information we're considering that they weren't, such as, you know, the special exception process and so on. I mean, I'm fine with it. I did come down and all. I'm fine with that too. That's just, I want to make sure we're deliberating.
So the building where the Stockbroker auto shop was, okay, if they knock that building down, and let's say Court and State decides they're not going to put townhouses on State Street there, and they decide instead to put a low building there, they can't put in a coffee shop, a tea shop, an antique store. You can't put that use in there, even though it would be perfectly appropriate to be there as an extension of the commercial district. So that's why this doesn't really make any sense to me.
And we can have that further discussion with the Planning Commission explaining why. So, okay. Any other comments?
It's inconsistent with promoting the business on State Street to have this lot, but not that lot, but this property, but not that property. If you look at the buildings from Penn Street all the way to the end of the borough, a lot of those buildings are now service buildings in the sense of psychiatrists, sociologists, lawyers, in chiropractors. So the business district has moved down all the way to the borough, the end of the borough. So it, not to allow businesses to go into buildings, is inconsistent with promoting the business community, which we need to do.
I agree.
And also, although not all of those buildings are this way, but the style of, you know, residential apartments up over, you know, businesses on the first floor.
I'm in favor of the deletion.
Okay. All right. So you're good. We're not going with the Planning Commission recommendations. We are okay with what we originally decided. Okay. Yeah. All right. So what we're going to do is the saldo and the zoning changes need to go through the whole advertisement review process, which we've talked about. And I know that Valentina's already drafted a first level, and we need to put some of the changes in that we talked about today. And that we'll have that draft ordinance ready on Tuesday. And at that point, what I'd like to do is to authorize it to be sent to both, in its formal form with the whereas clauses and all the rest of that, get sent to both planning commissions and then to advertise for adoption later in the fall, probably mid-October. I'm thinking it's for the October regular meeting. So we'll get something out for you to do. Yeah.
Julia, I would like to send it to our planning commission first, then the county planning commission, because if they're simultaneous and our planning commission comes back with, you know, any other comments or things or further explanation, for example, we would like to take their input before sending it to the county. Otherwise, we have to send it back to the county again. And
but Tara, they've seen it already. They've seen all of this already. We just talked about their comments.
I know. So, but
we
in general,
to them, we made our decision. I think we send it out simultaneously. We're still going to have the opportunity. It'll still come back from both of them. We still have an opportunity to make changes if we want before we adopt it. Maybe we can
It will have to be
readvertised. I can't hear either of you. I'm sorry.
If you make changes.
Well, no, only if. Who's talking?
Valentina.
I
understand that, Valentina, but we can wait. Like, if we send everything out in August and we want to have it, we want our public meeting to be in October, we don't have to advertise till September sometime, right?
Well, you have to advertise the ordinance and at the same time send it to the Planning Commission. So then if you're after the Planning Commission, they have notes, then you'd have to resend it to them after you edit it, along with re-advertising.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess my concern is there might be like two lines in all of this stuff that our Borough Planning Commission did not already receive. So they're going to look at, they'll see it again. And then we're also sending it to the other planning commission. Like, are we just giving them another opportunity to look at it and say, yeah, we already told you what we thought about it?
Right. It gives them an opportunity to look at what our thoughts were, why we sent it back and said no on these things, to either consider it differently, have a different argument, or because we're following the procedure. And the initial was, hey, planning commission, give us input because we're reviewing this. We're now moving to the advertising procedure, and that is first our planning commission, then the county, and then it comes back to advertisement and when we have it. So when this is in the past, we've had problems where something goes out simultaneously and then our planning commission is like, oh, well, why are you doing this? Do you not want to hear what we have to say? And I understand what you're saying, they've already seen it, but procedurally, in terms of the advertisement of the ordinance, it would be good to still follow that process, you know, and have that full conversation, because they have not yet had the opportunity to review what is the final that we are sending out. So, Valentina, was there something else? When you were talking initially, I'm not sure what you were saying. I couldn't quite hear.
Oh, I was just saying that that the county and the Borough Planning Commission are sent it at the same time, at the same time that it's advertised usually. And then if you want to make changes, you have to resend it back and re-advertise. So
wouldn't it make more sense to send it to the planning commissions, then once, you know, it's gone within internally and then to the county, then advertise, because otherwise you're paying extra money in re-advertising?
I'm kind of with Julia on this. We just did that. The Planning Commission just saw it. So why are we sending it back to them again? I don't know.
Yeah, and part of the requirement under the MPC is when you advertise an ordinance for adoption, it has to be sent to the local Planning Commission and the County Planning Commission. So that's a step in the process. Yeah. And I'm not disagreeing with what something Valentina said. I just want to clarify, not every change requires re-advertising. It would have to be substantial enough that it, you know, it changes something significant that would require re-advertising. Other than that, you can still move forward even if the planning commissions come back with some recommendations.
Okay. Yeah, and to just make it very clear, the reason I wanted to go to our planning commission to have that proper process is because their initial view was for input. It wasn't their review before the advertisement of an ordinance.
Well, I wasn't saying that they shouldn't see it again in its formal form. I mean, my understanding was that we would send it to both planning commissions simultaneously. And if we want to delay advertisement until it came back, you know, we can do that, but sending it back to our planning commission and waiting for them to respond, which will bring us to mid-September, sending it then to the Bucks County Planning Commission for their review. We're talking about maybe being able to publicly hear this in November. And we're getting really, we've managed to take a really long time on this. And I'm not sure that we really need to spread it out that far because the Borough Planning Commission has seen the substance of this already. They'll get to see it again, and I already told them they would see it a second time, but they gave their input, and we listened to it, and we made our decision.
Yeah, but if they come back with any other input, as is their right, by the process, and then we want to consider it, and then we send it to the county, then we're resending something new to the county, too, and that's part of the problem with doing it simultaneously to begin with.
So, Mike, if we send it to both planning commissions and the, let's say the county planning commission says, oh, looks good to us, tell us when you passed it, which is what they often do, and the borough planning commission says, oh, well, we still disagree with you about B1 and B2, and we make some changes and so on, does it go back to the Bucks County Planning Commission again, or have we just taken their input as part of our process?
You're taking their input as part of the process. And you fulfilled the requirement by sending it to them. Again, if you're going to adopt a completely different ordinance with dramatic changes again, then that's going to have to be re-advertised, and that's going to start the whole process over again. But Julia, one of the things I think you just said that's important to note is your planning commission is a recommendation. They're going to get a chance to review it and to make comments on it, but you don't have their advisory. And so you don't have to follow those suggestions if the council doesn't see fit. And from what I'm hearing, the planning commission has already weighed in on many of these things and you've decided to go in a different direction. So you're probably going to get some of the same comments back from them. So.
Right, but they may reconsider. What I'm doing is defending the worth and value of our planning commission, and that when we have a process, that we should allow them that proper input procedurally. And I recognize this one's a little bit different because they already had some chance for the initial process to look at things. It was just nice to have a consistent procedure and follow it that way. So that's all.
Well, so I don't think that sending them in parallel is an improper procedure, which sounds like what you're saying.
Yeah, well, because what Mike's saying is, yeah, we don't have to listen to them. But to me, part of the valuing that time and effort of the volunteers is sending it to them, seeing internally, getting the internal package that we're all good on together, then sending it off to the county. And then the county says, yes, no, great, whatever. And once it's yes, great, then we advertise and we hold the public meeting. And that allows for everything to move in a procedural fashion. So we had some issues in the past where something was done simultaneously or it was advertised at the same time it went to our planning commission. And, you know, they thought, well, this has already like been sent out. Why are you, you know, asking us? It sounds like you don't care about what we have to say.
And but they have,
actually they had to see it first. In that instance, we had worked on it ourselves and then said it, here it is, you guys look at it. And they got all, they were upset that we had not included them in the process, which is one of the reasons I sent the whole thing to them already and asked for their input beforehand.
Right.
So
all right. This is a different and it's a one-off. In general, I do want the procedure to be that we go to them. Then we take their input, then we send it to the county, and then we advertise, and not to have to like re-advertise or say, oh, we assumed you wouldn't have anything to say, so you know. So
Well, the Bucks County Planning Commission could come back with some feedback as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. All right.
So anyway, so Judy, can we put on next week's schedule under the e-code thing to look at the draft ordinance and okay it to send it however we decide to send it? Is she there?
Judy?
I gave you a yes. I'm sorry. I was muted. So you, yes, you want me to add that, and I will.
Okay, great. Okay, so there is light at the end of the tunnel. We are moving, and I'm hoping to have it all wrapped up and in a nice package to send off to General Code before Christmas.
So if we have a minute, I think I found the, I won't say disagreement, but they, you know, where the replacement tree comes in and the 2.5-inch caliper. So in dash 23 planting, it specifically talks about street trees slash, you know, shade trees, and that they should be at least 2.5-inch caliper and spaced 40 feet apart. So that's just, you know, one tree, but that's not anything to do with having removed other trees. That's just under any circumstances, you need to put in, you know, street trees. Then there's the other section that, you know, has to do with trees that, you know, the developer desires to remove that are not, you know, within the borough's tree conservation plan, meaning the 8-inch or 16-inch trees, and that has nothing about replacement. It is only, as has been said, don't do it or pay. So that may be where the, it was like sort of morphing that what has to be with shade trees at the street with the removal of existing trees. Hopefully that was understandable.
There's also a conflict with an appendix in the Shade Tree Commission ordinance, which we need to look at, and it refers to a yet another caliper of tree. So, yes.
Thank you, Marvin. That did help.
Wait, is that good?
I think that was it.
Okay. All right. Are there any other old business?
Yes, I would like to ask that people review the two policies that we've talked about a couple of times now, the right to know policy and conduct of public meetings. They've been revised after previous discussions, and they're in the share file folder. So if you could please take a look at those and let us know if you have any other concerns, changes, whatever. I'd like to keep moving on these. Thank you.
Thanks. Anyone else? Any new business?
I'm just going to real quick mention that there is a tree that needs some work. We're not sure. Hopefully it doesn't have to be taken down, but so there's a portion of the Linton Memorial Park closed, not the tot lot of Peaceable Kingdom. It's more in the area where Movies in the Park happens, and the police have marked off the area that's dangerous.
Okay. Thanks, Nicole.
Yes. We need.
I can just add to that. When I spoke to the chief after everything, after he marked off the area, he said that right now there's just cones out, but I'm going to, or actually I think he said that he was going to have some barricades put out tomorrow. One of us will make sure that Scott takes care of that, just to mark off that area, because there's a huge branch apparently that could fall at any time, and from the estimates and its size, it could cover half of the, you know, grassy area of Linton Park. So, but to Nicole's point, at least it's the tot lot's, you know, not a danger, not, it could never fall over into that area. It's just that open grassy area. So they're on it. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Judy.
You're welcome.
All right. Any other new business?
Well, only to add on that a representative of the Shade Tree Commission also took a look at that tree.
Yes, and he did. He found it to be, you know.
Yeah, and I believe
Ted. That's very dangerous.
Yeah, Ted will meet with TNT as soon as possible.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. He's going to call them tomorrow and follow up. And yeah.
Okay. Good. Thanks. Bob?
Sue, did you get the email from Michelle that we have a meeting with the engineer and the road contractor on the 17th? For the pre-construction meeting, and that the road construction will start by the end of the month, I think around the 24th. So we should be able to report back next week as to a schedule that we'll all know, because we'll have to post the streets for removal of cars, but we have to find out the sequence that we're doing the streets.
Okay, all right, so that'll be under the engineer's report.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll take care of that next week.
Great, thanks. All right, anyone else? Public to be heard? John, Bernie? Okay.
I'm okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. All right, well, thank you very much, Julia, for all your hard work with these updates. And we appreciate and thank you everyone for joining us. And I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move.
So move.
Oh, we got a motion for a second. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Nays? Motion passes. All right, good night, everybody. Thanks very much.
Have a good night, everyone.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.